It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul, and alongside contributors, Dave, Hans, and Leah, we will be exploring strong language, the power of swearing, curse words, their history, and relationship to laughter. Dave and Leah share two remarkable travel adventure stories recalled from youth. And the recently proposed super yacht called Pangaeos. A fantastic floating city that would house 60,000 people embarking on a journey with no fixed destination. So let's get into the first exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
We're seeing the most ambitious project, a massive floating city that challenges the norms. According to the Italian design studio, the concept of a terrayacht emerged when designer Pierpaolo Lazzarini envisioned a giant vessel construction capable of housing an entire city. The terrayacht is basically a floating city shaped like a giant sea turtle. It measures a whopping 1,800 feet, 550 meters, in length, and it has a maximum beam of 2,000 feet, 610 meters. The structure has a giant gate aft that allows vessels to enter this floating city. As for the floating structure, well, given its sheer size, it can host all sorts of facilities. In fact, Lazzarini says that it can offer up to 60,000 accommodations. The Pangaeos includes resorts and side apartments, but it also has beach clubs and numerous villas. There's even a massive rooftop garden and a mall. The terrayacht is designed to be outfitted with 9 HTS engines. Each motor is fully electric, and it can deliver enough power to make the vessel move at 5 knots, 5.7 miles per hour. It's not much, but keep in mind that we're talking about a giant floating city here.
Earlier today, you were telling me that you were planning a number of potential vacations, quick getaways. You had a number of different options. And then I couldn't help but think of something I saw.
I just opened up the link you sent me. It's a giant attack turtle with like 900 buildings inside it.
Yes, this is an article in Luxury Launch. .com.
Is that a yacht for one?
To be built in Saudi Arabia, this $5 billion giga yacht concept is so massive that it can dwarf an oligarch super yacht. The turtle shape Pangaeos will house 60,000 people, a floating city in itself. It will have beach clubs, villas, and even a mall.
Whoa. 60,000 people, that is a city. So what's going to happen when they all start breeding and like the little turtle eggs start coming out? They're just going to, it's just going to get so crowded because the space doesn't expand. Or does it? Like within three generations, those 60,000 people will be 250,000 at least. And then they're all just going to be on top of each other. The pool is just going to be filled with piss and people are going to be fighting over the last of the food. It's a beautiful vehicle, though. I love it. People haven't gotten creative with vessel shapes like this for a long time. They all look like boats.
And a spokesman from him said, Lazzarini claims the mammoth dwelling can be home to 60,000 people who live lavishly in resorts side apartments, and a myriad of modern villas. So this isn't necessarily like a vacation destination. This is an actual floating city that you'd live on forever, as you say. And then with all these fantastic villas and all these amazing parties, there's bound to be some coupling that would go on, don't you think?
Yeah. I'm looking at this picture here and wondering, is that a football stadium in there?
It kind of looks like that, doesn't it?
This is amazing, though. Is this for real, or is this just a concept?
Apparently, it's begun to be built, and it will be launched from a 4.198 million square foot shipyard in Saudi Arabia. With no single destination in mind, Pangaeos will be perpetually itinerant around the world, so it'll never stop traveling around the world.
No destination. That is it. That is a dangerous ship to get on. Like, eventually, you're going to hit land, and you just have no idea where that's going to be. And there could be pirates.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what would happen if it was grounded on land somewhere? When, how would they be rescued? Like, 60,000 people to rescue, that'd be a lot.
How about weapons array, or how are you going to defend the city? Does it have a small army? Little turtle fangs?
Why do people... I mean, these concepts seem ludicrous, though.
Yeah, this is even kind of half-assed ludicrous.
Right.
But I mean, maybe, just maybe, some... They probably brought this video that they made, someone made as their school project at learning CAD 3D in 1997 off to some Saudi prince and said, hey, you got a place to stick this thing? He's like, yes, I have 7,000 miles of desert beach. You can build your crazy yacht. And he's like, well, and if you're looking for investors in the yacht, I'm in. And they're like, okay, we need $700 gazillion. And he ponies up and makes the big turtle. But eventually the next, you know, prince is going to jump in and make some kind of turtle predator. And it's going to turn into a crazy floating battle at sea. Like, oh, in this still I'm looking at here, there's actually a tall ship in the center of the turtle. I'm not kidding. They have a tall ship in there. That's just to give you a sense of the scale of this thing.
And 9HTS fully electric engines power the vessel with a consistent speed of 5 knots. So it's going to be powered by electric engines.
It's going to be a real mess if there's a tsunami. Like, did anyone consider what a tidal wave will do to that thing? Like, that turtle's going to be thrown clear across the Atlantic.
It says it moves at 5 knots an hour. I mean, that's really slow.
Well, it has nowhere to go. There's no destination. So, I mean, imagine the thing floats into the North Atlantic and then, like, gets lodged in the ice. And it's like, oh, fuck, why are you going to the Arctic? And they're like, well, we didn't really know where we were going. That's probably not the best place to go because it's fucking cold. Icebergs. For the first, like, 5 years of its life, it's like this beautiful paradise. They're, like, cruising the Caribbean and shit. Then they go up to Alaska. They go try to do the Northwest Passage or something, and they get jammed in there. And they've been there for, like, 100 years since. They become basically Inuit peoples. And that floating floor, that just becomes, like, a giant ice rink. Shinny on the Lido deck.
I mean, because you could never, I guess you, how difficult would it be to leave this thing to even go on a vacation from the city that you live in, which would be floating?
You can't leave. There's three helicopters there, and they're being reserved for emergencies and like two or three like super big wigs. No one's getting off that thing. You try to swim, you could try to swim. Good luck with all the ice. I wonder if on a cruise ship with 60,000 people like that, they still have free taco bar. Is there a buffet for the whole boat?
Like, this really is just an infinite cruise. It's an infinite cruise. There's no different. Like, you'd have to have how many entertainers would be on board? How many?
Well, the whole economy is going to develop on there. Like, people have to work because if they're not landing anywhere, it's going to be like Montreal. It'll be like people making coffee and serving coffee and drinking coffee economy. Then probably a religion will also crop up, at least one. The dolphins versus the tuna. The giant tuna religion. My fellow turtle dwellers. I was on the Lido deck last night, and I saw a great tuna rising in the sky, and it spoke to me. It said, the people of the turtle will rise in a new order that we shall call Tortuga, and it will be coated in chocolate and frosted in ice.
If you think back to the last time you were in pain, your reaction might have been something like this. Swearing in response to painful stimuli is a pretty common human behavior. But for a long time, psychologists thought it was a bad idea, that swearing puts you in a negative state of mind and makes you think you're in a worse situation than you actually are, something called catastrophizing.
Well, Andy Murray's fiancée Kimsey has dropped swear words at the Australian Open that we won't repeat here. But she has scientists on her side because they say that apart from letting off steam, swearing is good for pain relief. Ita.
Whenever I'm in pain, I swear like a trooper.
Do you?
Oh, look, yeah. I don't take pills, no. Give me the good swear word to beat pain any day.
The power of swearing, how obscene words influence your mind, body, and relationships. One of the things that they were saying is that when you say you stub your toe, so you get hurt, and you start swearing, that has, is measured it to have...
like a painkiller?
It has a pain-killing effect.
Yeah.
Through various physiological functions that are brought on by the swear word, but it's not as obviously not the word itself because every language has their own swear words and one swear word wouldn't have meaning to the other language. It's the meaning that we give them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like it's like forbidden, but it's like a release at the same time and a like almost like a rebellion kind of thing, but you can, yeah. It's like the naughty word that's gonna make everything feel better. Explains so much.
I've often wondered, like, you know, when you're watching something and you hear the bleep because they said a swear word and there's a list of those words. I always wondered, like, what we could just tell everybody, okay, those words aren't swear words anymore. You're allowed to say them. But clearly, what we've done as a species is decided to save those, set those aside for just the right time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like. You almost have to have the rules in place for them to be as effective as they are.
I was thinking, I just thought of the song, you know, it's Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their famous song where it's like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. And it just repeats.
Mm-hmm.
That use of swearing in music, it was, I think, really, really effective because it had a lot of emotion behind it.
Yes, interlaced with... substantive political undertones and some dank analog guitar amps.
yeah. Like, do you find just, do you swear a lot, Heinz? Are you like a particularly, do you curse a lot? Like, or do you?
Yes, a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. I must be in a lot of pain all the time. It's just, it is what it is. Any small minor inconvenience, I will like just go off. Very, very vile.
But wait a minute. We've hung out many, many times for many, many, many hours at a time.
Yeah, but like I don't have to like clean your house and there's like picking up like cat shit and stuff, you know, all the gritty stuff.
Oh, like we're usually having a good time or we're relaxed or chill or whatever.
Yeah, we're all presentable and there's like favorable conditions. Like any unfavorable condition, I'll go off and it's, I'm very, I'm pretty creative, but I lean on certain words I like to use a lot.
All right, so it's kind of casual then. It doesn't have the same effect as.
I would say it does, and I do, and I work a lot.
So it's cope, is it?
Absolutely, coping mechanism for sure. Yeah, and it doesn't like mean anything. It's just like a poof, catharsis, like, you know, just get it out, keep moving on, and sometimes it happens more times than others, and
yeah, according to this article that I was referencing here, I should have said it's from the site called The Conversation, The Power of Swearing, and it references to what you just said. You're speaking about catharsis, the release of strong emotion, and this catharsis effect is always greater when swearing.
For sure.
So even if you just went like, ah, you know, made a sound that was a kind of a form of catharsis, I guess, if you add in the swear word, it just gets better.
Yeah. That's all it takes, man.
So do we need to have a few new ones made, like brand new ones made up, so we can have even more powerful ones, ones that you use like once a year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they would implicitly have to be like forbidden, you know what I mean? Like, it's all about, because you have the element of like they're forbidden, like where when you said them as a kid, you get your like mouth washed out with soap or something like that. They would have to have like a background meaning of, you know, like a forbidden item. And when you like pluck from that, you're like, you're breaking the rules, and that feels good. And then also you're like probably louder.
In today's modern galaxy, there is of course very little still held to be unspeakable. Many words and expressions which only a matter of decades ago were considered so distastefully explicit that, were they merely to be breathed in public, the perpetrator would be shunned, barred from polite society, and in extreme cases shot through the lungs, are now thought to be very healthy and proper, and their use in everyday speech is seen as evidence of a well-adjusted, relaxed, and totally un-f***ed up personality. Though even words like juju flop, swat, and turlingdrome are now perfectly acceptable in common usage, there is one word that is still beyond the pale. The concept it embodies is so revolting that the publication or broadcast of the word is utterly forbidden in all parts of the galaxy except one, where they don't know what it means. That word is...
And some of those words, like, just because we don't want to make this necessarily an expletive fest, like the F word, I find that that's a particularly satisfying and useful word.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, actually, when I was at work the other day, one of our cashiers, whatever, was like, oh, you like taught me a new like swear word today that I didn't know before. She's from Thailand. So I was like, yeah.
Oh, so English is her second language, as it were?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So she didn't know this particular swear word. Well, what was it?
Oh, it was just...
Oh!
that's a big frequent one.
So for some people, that's that's a word they try not to use very often, because it's has like a harsh sound.
Must be why I use it a lot. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a time and place for everything, but I don't know. Get creative with it, get real dirty with it, and have some fun with the curse words.
And now, for the first time on network television, the PAX Network proudly presents the syndicated television debut of The Sopranos. This program has been edited for content.
Who ate all the gabagool?
No more gabagool for you. The doctor said it's bad for you.
I don't give a f- Can I get some more gabagool?
What am I, your servant? Fuck!
You know what? I don't need this sh-
You want some gabagool? Why don't you get it from one of your little Russian who-
Tell you what, why don't you stop freaking my ball?
popping over to the ultra-handy Wikipedia page on profanity. In its older, more literal sense, profanity refers to the lack of respect for things that are held to be sacred.
Yes, that's why some of our oldest profanities, which now just seem like friendly, little, cute, comic, you know, Archie says it or something.
Archie?
Like, yeah, like, I don't know. It's just like, geez and egads, you know, like, Jesus and oh God, you know, or whatever, you know.
Right.
They all were profanities.
Oh, so what does egads mean?
Like, egads is something to do with God. Like, the gad is God, guaranteed.
It is indeed considered a mild expletive.
Oh, yes.
Egads.
Yes, but I'm sure in the 15th century or something, it would have been a major expletive, not a mild one, like it is now, you see. Because to take the name, the word, the, you know, so it's just like in French, it would be like, you know, sacré bleu, you know. That's another one, because you're referencing, I think, the blood of Christ at that point or something, but you know, sacred blue, but yeah.
You're yeah. Right. I mean, that's something Pepe Le Pew would say without any problem.
Sacre bleu.
So that was not going to get you bleeped today, but 500 years ago, that would get you more than bleeped.
That might get you, yeah, burned at the stake or something. No, I'm kidding, but you know what I mean. It was highly transgressionary language.
We were learning something here in the Wikipedia page that Canadians swear more than Americans and Brits for whatever reason.
Hell yeah. That's right, eh?
Friggin' rights, bro.
The hosers know how to throw down, and we get cold a lot, and so it's pain relief.
Oh right.
Damn, that wind is cold and biting.
Now, here's an article that you showed me in sciencealert.com. And the headline is, swearing is actually a sign of more intelligence, not less.
I've always been effing saying that.
And I think the basic idea is that if you tend to swear a lot and use, say, a lot of creative swearing, it also means that you have a good command of the language otherwise. And
when you make up new, you know, fucticles. New words. When you get creative with your profanity, then you're really an intelligent ape.
I think that the way people measure intelligence is a bit to be...
It's become more sophisticated, so you'd have to actually interrogate how they're assessing intelligence.
Exactly. We'd have to do a deep dive on this. We'll just take it for what it is now. Just a headline. Swearing is actually a sign of more intelligence, not less.
Yeah. That's the way for all of us who swear too often to feel better about ourselves.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Well, speaking of cathartic, Dave, do you swear a lot? Fuck yeah.
So, Dave, I was wondering, what do you think about these forbidden words, the power of these forbidden words?
I would say it's like an expulsion of energy. It's a release. And like the martial artist who must make a sound as they come at someone, or the tennis player who must put all of their energy into the ball as they hit it back. It's very similar to someone cursing with great gusto. Part of it's like whether they're fun to say and whether they've got that ability through the sound and the mouth motion to properly expel that negative energy. And there's something violent and there's something aggressive about it, which is a big part of the human nature, which we very rightly repress. So it's a way to kind of get that part of our nature out with, you know, an audio violence. Some people get the same effect from laughing. You can have pain relief and catharsis and energy transfer from laughing. And some people laugh when they're nervous just to do that, right? And then the swearing and the laughing between the stand-up and the audience is basically just this crazy tennis volley of good and bad energy. And you build up the bad energy, and then the good energy comes out, and then eventually it can reach this insane crescendo. This is what Andrew Dice Clay learned in the school of say fucking every single sentence. It's a whole comedy style.
Fucking phenomenal. Yeah, it's a beautiful world, isn't it? It's a beautiful fucking world. It sucks, huh? Fuck you.
Here's an article in New York Post, and let me get the headline here. It's Origins of the Naughtiest Swear Words in the English Language. And the most important part about this is this. In most people, language is generated on the left side of the brain.
Yeah.
The half.
It's logical.
So yes, associated with logic, motor functions, and math.
Math, yeah.
But when we let loose with a particularly satisfying swear word, the right side of our gray matter, associated with emotion and cathartic expression, lights up on imaging scans, reveals Columbia linguistics professor John McWhorter.
Right. So when you combine it with language, it's really a right-left brain unifying activity, and you got your corpus callosum activated. So maybe that's part of why it's beneficial to us. We've evolved it and we've used it for a long time. But yeah, the words are old. I mean, I think the S word, the four-letter S word, are we allowed to swear on here?
Well, we already have.
Okay, well, we have been. So shit, I think, is one of the oldest ones. It's like proto-Germanic. And fuck is also, I believe, Germanic in origin. And then, you know, damn, you're getting into the Latin. A newer swear word, damn is.
In the Wikipedia article that we were looking at earlier, I just noticed it says, the word wanker is considered profane in Britain, but it dates only to the mid-20th century. So there's an example of a new one. And that is something I've been thinking quite a lot about. It's like, can we come up with a brand new one?
Of course.
Not necessarily right here, right now, or anyone listening to this.
A challenge for all listeners.
Can anyone think of a really good new curse word
that doesn't insult other group of people?
Exactly. It's not abusive. It's cathartic.
Yeah.
And pain relieving.
Yeah.
Because...
And I'm using the best of our language.
And I'm referring by the pain relief. An actual study showed literal physical pain relief from swearing. So, it has to be one of those two effects, cathartic or pain relieving. Can we come up with a new curse word that would catch on and that maybe you'd only use once or twice in your life? They're that powerful.
Stengelmatt!
Oh, no, that sounded German.
Yeah, I know. Because there's something about the German words like shit and fuck that, you know, there's a reason why they're the all-time favorites. Fuck ranks number one, shit ranks number two.
F-U-C-K, fuck. Fuck is the world's favourite swear word online and one of the most taboo words in the English language. For centuries, it rarely appeared in print, and even today, it is often referred to as the F word or F bomb. Fuck can be inserted into almost any part of any sentence in countless ways. As a verb, it doesn't just mean to have sex with, it can also mean to damage or ruin. You can use it as a noun to label someone a fat fuck, a useless fuck, or if you're feeling complimentary, a good fuck. It's a great replacement word. Someone could offer you a fuckload of cash, to which you might reply, abso-fucking-lutely. Fuck is an exceptionally flexible expletive. It can be used to express annoyance, what the fuck, impatience, for fuck's sake, or even shock. Fuck, you might have a fuck face, be fucked up, witness a clusterfuck, and even cry fuck a duck, which is all a bit of a headfuck.
No, it's the ultimate multi-purpose. I mean, we just keep creatively innovating on that. I know the question was, can we have a new curse word? But we keep re-fucking fuck so many times that, you know, it's got probably thousands of meanings.
So you actually mentioned a little earlier about the word damn. Damn has its origins in Latin, like you said, with the word damnum, meaning to damage, hurt, or harm. So when you say God damn, you're saying God damage or hurt that thing. Ooh, pretty nasty, actually. That was the first swear word that ever made it into American cinema, was the word damn.
Was it really? Which movie? Do you know?
Gone with the Wind.
Huh.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Red, you go. Where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
If you don't swear, then how you process certain emotions, you know, I'd be curious.
Oh, perhaps those are the masters among us. Someone who never has the need to curse. Maybe they've got the secret of life.
Of old-time fiddles, the singing, dancing, and fun of America's greatest tradition in entertainment, the Grand Ole Opry, live just as it happens. One full hour of country music and comedy sent your way by Purina, the greatest name in livestock and poultry feeding.
To drive to Florida? Have you done it?
I believe I have done it once.
You believe?
Maybe not. No, I drove to New Orleans.
Spontaneously? From Toronto?
It was actually a trip I did in high school from Ottawa, but we did come first to Toronto. It is on the way.
Really? So, how did that come about?
The trip to New Orleans?
Yeah.
It was a girl I sat beside in one of my classes just invited me. And it was actually designed to be a trip to Graceland. And we just kept going to New Orleans. We did a stop in Memphis. Well, I mentioned Grizzly. Yeah, we went to Memphis. But we did a stop in Nashville as well. By car. It's an awesome trip.
So this is from high school?
Yeah. We came to Toronto. Then drove down through Cincinnati.
So wait, who was the mastermind of this trip?
It was this girl. I think her name was Kate.
What kind of car did you drive in?
That's a good question. It was either like a Volvo or a Toyota. I feel like it was blue.
So how long did this trip take?
A week.
Back and then to return?
Yeah, the return was like a hardcore. You know, we just drove for days.
So did you have a lot of money with you or cash?
We must have had some. We were staying in we weren't staying in expensive hotels, but it was also cheap. I remember we did stay in a Motel 6, but in Nashville we stayed in a hotel with a guitar shaped pool, and the tiles made the strings. That was awesome. And in Memphis there was a rooftop hot tub at the hotel. I remember that. That was good. We were drinking whiskey.
So you're driving from Ottawa, Ontario, all the way down. To which border did you cross from Canada to the United States?
I think it was Fort Erie, maybe.
All right, so you crossed the border. What did you tell the border guards?
We said we were going to Graceland.
Right, so how many people were in the car?
Four people.
And you told them you're going to Graceland?
Yeah.
And
we were like maybe 16 or 17. We went to the Grand Ole Opry. It was really important to me to get to the Grand Ole Opry. Even as a young child, I was like, if took the first place I wanted to go when I came out of the womb. Take me to the Opry.
You know, I used to go to sleep on my grandpa's lap, listening to the Grand Ole Opry in his old Ford pickup truck out by the barn. It was the greatest sound I'd ever heard in my life, and I wanted so much to be a part of it.
So the person, again, the person that asked you in, just in class casually, would you let to go to, was it originally Graceland or Memphis?
It was originally Graceland. And then we were having such a good time. We just was like, hey, it's only one more day to New Orleans. We went for that, and that was awesome. But it was an amazing trip. I remember stopping in Kentucky as well and visiting some caves.
Sounds like an amazing adventure.
It was. We had a really, really fun time. Like, it was a lot of laughing. A lot of, it's kind of the first real feeling of freedom I ever had.
Was there any harrowing events along the way?
No, you know, it was, not that I remember anyway. It was pretty like awesome, smooth trip, yeah. I was glad. I'm glad to this day that they brought me there, though. I had such a good time.
So did you have to, like, did you have to clear it with anyone, or did you?
Yeah, that's my mom.
Right, and she agreed to it.
Yeah.
As it was, not some kind of obfuscated or, like, fictional version of
she
it.
She let us go on a road trip to Graceland when we were 16. Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, there were responsible girls, like, around, you know.
Excellent. So you made it to Graceland, then?
Yes. I went in the mansion. I got the tour.
I'm happy you can join us now, as we make our own private tour of Graceland. And I'm pleased to be able to act as your host for this hour and contribute some insights into the life and career of this living legend named Elvis Presley.
That story I would call really fucking cool things you did when you were young and excellent.
Yeah, well, I think it helped teach me about music. It helped teach me about America. It also helped teach me that, like, I was good, you know? Like, I moved out 2 years later. So if I probably would have still left when I was 18. I'm not going to give that trip credit, but definitely, it just felt like, this is a lot more fun to be totally free. Yeah.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery. The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
So, the adventures of youth.
Oh, so many.
So you have a story to tell that involves, well, you were traveling at the time.
Yeah. Incredibly privileged to have been able to travel quite a bit through Europe on the train as a teenager in my final year of high school. And in particular, this journey was a really fun, epic journey from the toe to the very top of the boot of Italy, over about a week or so, through the Easter holidays, Easter break, traveling with a good friend and some others that I didn't know so well, backpacking it, you know, train pass, that kind of thing. And it was an incredible journey. I was on an extremely limited, tight budget. This was there. I had a bank card, which was innovative for the time, but it only accessed funds from one ATM in one city. There was not a network where I could access funds. And even then, there was no money in that account because my parents hadn't been able to transfer any.
So you're on an extremely fixed budget.
Yeah, I basically borrowed cash from a friend to afford the trip. I had the train pass already, and in Switzerland I had a local regional transit pass, and so I borrowed cash, which was just enough to do a very budget trip through Italy for about a week with friends, and I had whatever amount per day available to me, and if I lost it I was in trouble, so I carried that cash in the bottom of my Doc Martin boots. I slept with it there. I would just take out the exact amount I had for the day, put that in my, hip sack, which they're popular again.
Bum bags, as the Brits call them.
It's probably a better name. But yeah, I would take out a little bit for the day, and all the rest of it was stuffed in the bottom of my like tall boots, so that they were very difficult to remove. So even when I was sleeping on a train, I knew they were safe because I'd sleep with those boots on and someone would have to wake me up to remove them for me to rob me of my funds. So this was the trip. So we'd been traveling together. And at the end of the trip, as we were heading up to the north part of Italy, they wanted to go to a big city. They wanted to go to Milan and check it out, all the fashions, blah, blah. I didn't want to go there. I had enough left for one more day. I was out of money and I wanted to go to the Lake District. So I separated from them and went on my own.
So just one day's supply of cash.
Yes. And so I went solo to the beautiful Lake District and I spent all of my remaining cash, every last cent. Was able to find a hotel that was budget and clean and included a continental breakfast, and that was the last of the cash. And so I was going to ride fumes back to my front door in Switzerland because I had a train pass for Italy to get me into Switzerland, and then I had my transit pass once I got to my town to get me to my front door. So next morning, get up, have my little bun and espresso and mosey over to the small train station. Happy to see that there is a train coming in that's going to stop in my town in Switzerland and board it. And as soon as I get on, there's the very efficient conductor, because I think it was already a Swiss train. I don't know. Because the conductor was there. Showed him my train pass. And he said, "Oh, well, you're going to have to give me another 10 Swiss francs." And I said, No. Here's my train pass. So, yeah, 10 Swiss euros, please. And I'm astounded that this is being asked of me. And I'm,
because you thought that you were going to be able to get right into your town.
Yeah.
In Switzerland from
just
that,
use
that,
the pass.
That train station. But here, conductor informs you, no.
It's a special train. There's a special fee. You need to pay 10 euros.
Or get off the train.
Or get off the train, yes. So I'm buying time at this point, but my heart is absolutely pounding. And because I don't have 10 euro, 10 francs. I don't have any money. Lira, francs, nothing, right? So, but I'm buying time. I'm like, okay, come back in a couple of minutes. Let me just find that for you. Just give me a second, okay? Just give me a second, please. And so off he goes to check everyone else's tickets. And I'm literally imagining myself being dropped off in the middle of the mountains, because this is what I'm in now. I'm now in the Italian mountains, which are huge and rural. And the towns are tiny, and I'm imagining myself hitchhiking back to Switzerland, or I can't imagine what I'm going to do.
They were going to kick you off the train.
Yeah.
If you couldn't pay.
Yeah.
And they'd say, sayonara, sweetheart. And you had, there's no cell phones.
No cell phones.
No internet per se.
No.
To speak of.
No.
It's not widely available.
There's hitchhiking.
There's hitchhiking. But again, you don't speak Italian. Okay, so
there's hitchhiking and there's maybe another train that doesn't have this fee. But anyhow.
So you're desperately digging around in your stuff, I guess.
Yes. So even though I know I don't have any money, I'm just desperately checking every nook, cranny, the tiny, every pocket in my backpack, in my hip sack, in my clothing that I can imagine. And I find some tiny little pocket hidden inside of the backpack, and lo and behold, there is 10 Swiss francs, the exact amount that I need. tucked away in this tiny, I didn't even know it existed, you know, or forgot it existed, pocket. And I mean, if a person can fall to their knees and, you know, hallelujah and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it was happening because it was a total, in my mind, this felt like a miracle. I mean, I had no idea where this came from. If I had put it there, I had no memory of it. It was like my past self listening to some future self saying, hey, you're going to need this. Or it was, what do you call it? A guardian angel or something. Or it was just some money that had been put there months before and somehow completely forgotten.
Well, perhaps it's like, you know, sometimes when you say you're out late at night and you're in full revelry mode and you end up at home and then you wake up the next morning like, wow, how did I not manage to forget my wallet, lose my keys, like lose my phone? You know, there's something self-protective about ourselves that we can often like think ahead.
Yeah.
Manage it somehow.
Mm-hmm. So it was not the day before. It was in no time, like, you know, in the memorable past had I put that money there, but it was there. I found it. I almost fainted with relief when the conductor came back looking for his 10 francs. I had it for him, and then I rode in with the rest of my fumes and, you know, used my transit pass and got to the front door and still had my key, got myself in, and
wow, and lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing journey. It was and the ending was almost the cherry on top, because I genuinely had my heart in my throat. I was just like, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble right now. I'm gonna have to talk my way out of this one somehow, or really, you know, I don't know, adapt to this emergency situation. But there was an answer, and it was exact.
And you live to tell the tale. These adventures.
They were awesome adventures, yes.
Or make for wonderful memories.
Yeah. Learn a lot through these kinds of adventures. Learned a lot. A lot of fun. Much appreciated.
Listeners, before we part, let me leave you with a quote from 20th century Spanish painter and sculptor Pablo Picasso, who said simply, quote, "It takes a very long time to become young," unquote. We hope you have enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. Until next time.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.